matter what people say. We got it going on. Who cares about what they think?
You know me, I'm the hottest in the
game. WJMS. This is According to RP.
Turn up the volume, kick back, and get raw with us.
From the latest hip hop beats to social issues that cripple the black community, all from the perspective of a young, strong black woman.
A strong black woman.
And now your host, Rita.
Welcome back, everyone, for another episode of According to RP on WJMS Radio. It's your girl, Rita Pierre, your host. And I mean, what can I say? It's another Sunday in the corona apocalypse, right? I can't even say I hope you guys are enjoying your weekend. I hope you guys had a great week, because if we're being honest, I think a lot of us are still in a state of panic. We're in a state of despair. We're losing people right from left. You know, nothing makes sense anymore in this world. We don't even know when we're going to be let free. So, I mean, I think we are trying to do the best that we can, but to say that it's a great week, wonderful week, I don't know if we're quite there yet. At some point we will get there. At some point we need to get there, right? Because we can't continue to live in the state that we're in right now. We're going to have to find some sort of silver lining. We're going to have to find a way to bring the joy back into our lives, despite what's happening outside of the four corners of our apartment or home. Those of you who have the the luxury of having space during a time like this. But, you know, the show must continue. The show must go on. At first, you know, there were some people who were like, do you think you're going to continue your show during this time? I mean, everybody should really take a pause. And although New York City is allegedly on pause, however, despite what I'm seeing on social media, it seems like a lot of people are just kind of like business as usual. But even though, you know, we're supposed to all be kind of taking a break, I guess, from real life to digest what's going on, at least that's what I've been told. Not all of us operate that way, right? You guys know me pretty well. At least those of you who know me pretty well. And those of you who have just been tuning in over the course of, I don't know, the last year or two that I've been doing this show, know that Rita doesn't really take a break for anybody, which is not a good thing. I am not promoting that. I will say, during this time of pause, in a sense, I have tried to, you know, I guess meditate a little more. I mean, outside of being sick for a couple of weeks, I am now doing a lot better. And so I'm just continuing meditation, continuing my aromatherapy stuff that I've been doing, continuing, you know, strengthening my relationship in God and my foundation. Because at the end of the day, at least for me, you know, what else can you do in this life? There's no hope without God, right? So for me, that's where I'm choosing to focus my energy, my relationship with Christ, getting to a place of mindfulness where, you know, I am not allowing the ills of the world to really affect me, and, you know, to really heal myself. I do believe in the power of healing, you know, obviously through prayer and, you know, mindfulness. I believe that you can heal yourself. And a lot of times we experience ailments, we have these issues, and they're real issues, but these are things that, you know, if we take certain steps to fix them, we can do it, you know, whether it be through exercise, eating the right things. This, you know, at this particular time, people are, you know, the WhatsApp physicians are king, sharing all their garlic and, you know, and onion, you know, recipes, their teas, all these spices. Like, this is the time where people are really coming together and really sharing their knowledge of how the earth can heal us. And so I'm saying all of this and I'm slowly falling off of track. But either way, what I'm trying to say is this is a very hard time. It's a very critical time in the lives of many of us. I mean, mental illness is on the rise. Not just mental illness, but just having, you know, the mental health concerns, rather, because there is, you know, kind of a difference, right? But people are feeling a little unstable, right? I mean, you have relatives, we have friends who are dying, and we cannot grieve with one another. We cannot bury our loved ones in the way that they deserve to be buried. We cannot pay our last respects. And this is truly eating at a lot of us. And so our mental health is really, you know, critical at this time to try to keep it together and try to really get to a place of mindfulness. And the one thing I will say to encourage all of you is that it's not going to take place overnight. I know a lot of us are having trouble sleeping. We are having troubles functioning on the day to day. But what I will say is that if we, you know, continue to just take steps in the right direction, you know, put on your peppermint oil, your lavender oils to help calm you down, your lemongrass oils. If you're starting to feel issues, you know, with your respiratory, sometimes that could just be your mental really getting, you know, getting in the way. Put on the tea tree oil, the lemongrass to really open up your lungs, you know, take warm baths. There's so many different things that we can do to kind of calm us down and to bring us into a space where we can, you know, think and function, right? There's a lot of meditation apps right now, a lot of, you know, free apps at that. YouTube has a lot of guided meditation that I have personally done so that I could try to get some hours of sleep. And so, you know, and taking the steps to really help ourselves, you know, don't get discouraged if by the second night, you know, you're like, I've sniffed peppermint oil for 2 days now and I still can't sleep, or I've done 3 meditations and it's not working. Keep at it, because it's really hard, especially if you're an anxious person, if you're somebody who's wound up, it's really hard to just snap out of it. You have to chip away at the layers. And I guarantee you that, you know, after like day 5 or whatever, you will notice that there is a difference. Maybe you didn't get a full night's sleep, but maybe you got one extra hour that you didn't get the day before. And, you know, if you were to get bad news, you'll realize that it's not necessarily affecting you the way that it might have on day 1. So I do encourage you guys to keep at it, to really get into a place of mindfulness. I mean, I'm telling you all this because I'm actively doing this. I'm not, you know, just telling you guys to do something and I haven't done it myself, or, you know, or I've tried it and it doesn't work. I'm actively doing this, and I can say from like day 1 to now, I've definitely seen a difference. I'm not 100% there yet, but I'm still working at it. But either way, so today's show is going to be a tribute episode to our I don't even know what words to use for him, but he is a soul. He's been a soldier in the community, a friend to the community, an advocate in the community. He's just been that person for a lot of us, particularly in the Haitian community in Brooklyn. And, you know, we lost a soldier recently due to coronavirus, you know, due to COVID-19. And today we wanted to have a tribute episode to Gibbs, Big Gibbs, as some people call him, who was a active fighter in our community, particularly within HAC. We wanted to take this time to give a tribute to him because, you know, a lot of people who were touched by him, who have encountered him, who have experienced him, you know, they're mourning right now. We're all mourning right now. But it's weird because in our community, especially when we mourn, we get together. We mourn together. We crack jokes together. We celebrate together. And during this time of Corona, we can't do any of that. We, you know, we're attempting to do so electronically, video chat wise, you know, all this extra stuff, but it's not the same. And I think that that type of pain is being experienced by a lot of people. The other thing too is that we just didn't want our boy to go down like that, you know, to just be, you know, just another person who died from coronavirus. We wanted to take this time, especially since we have the platforms to do so, to really give him a proper tribute, to talk about him, the legacy that he's left behind, the legacy that he, you know, was building really when he was still alive, and how we plan to continue his legacy, you know, as we move forward with life. I think the topic of legacy is something very important, and we might revisit it on later episodes of this show. I think that within our community, you know, we interpret legacy to mean so many different things, and it's really important for us to talk about what legacy means, how we can keep one's legacy alive, and how we ourselves can create legacy. It's not always about, you know, who has the most money, who has the most fame or fortune, but a lot of our local heroes, people who were changing lives within the community, they, you know, they are heroes, and their legacies, you know, will live on through the people that they've touched. And so today's episode is going to be dedicated to to Gibbs Serafin, but most people don't know his last name, so we're just going to call him Big Gibbs. And to do that, we're going to have Sam Pierre, the executive director of the Haitian American Caucus, Jackson Sherry, who is a world famous musician and executive producer of Bridging the Gap. And we're going to have Jeff Lindor, who is the founder of the Gentleman's Factory. So they're going to be on a little later to talk about Gibbs, talk about their experiences with Gibbs and how he's changed lives and how his legacy is going to continue living on, you know, forever and ever and ever. But before we get into the meat of the show, it is time for our Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week.
Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
May I have the definition?
What does skeet skeet mean?
What's on fleek?
Can you use it in a sentence?
Hopping on fleek, lit.
And it's gonna be lit.
Major key.
It's time for the Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week.
So this week's Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week is antisocial nearing. So, antisocial nearing is the opposite of social distancing. In a pandemic, when people ignore the advice of social distancing and instead engage in antisocial nearing activities like shaking hands, hugging, and spending time in large crowds. Example, that coughing, sniffling lunatic went into a full-on antisocial nearing hug when the CDC says we should be practicing social distancing. Another example, the president of the United States for weeks encouraged antisocial nearing, telling everyone not to worry because the pandemic was under control and might just disappear. So I don't know if people are actually using this term antisocial nearing, but either way, whether it's legit, whether you guys actually think it's something that we need to be using, whether it's whack, corny, whatever, the concept behind it is what's important to me. For the last few days, I have been sent clips from individuals who have been observing crowds of people hanging out in Brooklyn, New York. And I've seen some clips in DC as well, too. Like, it seems like all the hotspots seem to have hubs of individuals who just do not care about life and do not care about humanity. But I feel like, you know, as crazy and serious as this coronavirus situation is, I find that people, there is still a large part of the population that does not think that it is that serious, because these individuals are out here in these streets hanging out in close quarters. Now, when we're talking about the healthcare workers and the essential workers, such as the grocery people, the delivery people, janitors, you know, cleaners, we're not talking about them. Unfortunately, they are put in a very uncomfortable, a very unsafe predicament to have to still be out here in these streets riding the crowded MTA trains and whatnot to try to get to their jobs. I'm not talking about them being out because they have to do what they have to do. But I saw a clip, I think it might have been 2 days ago, of Prospect Park, where individuals, mostly of the Caucasian persuasion, were hanging out, you know, walking their dogs, jogging, you know, just having like a regular spring day. And it looked like, I mean, from the picture, it seemed like it was a lot of people. And I know some people were like, well, New York City is always crowded, so this is not considered crowded for New York City, but it violates the 6 feet rule, right? Like, if, I mean, people were literally like maybe, you know, 1 foot away from each other. Like, that's what I was seeing. And these were not essential workers. Like, they were just out hanging out. And yes, I understand that there is a need for fresh air and whatnot, but hanging around Prospect Park and running around and crowding in front of Grand Army Plaza, that is not, you know, what I'm thinking about getting fresh air. That's not what I'm thinking about. And, you know, every day we're hearing more and more crazy stories about churches still having, you know, services, synagogues still having their services, people still trying to perform weddings. In fact, the other day in Brooklyn, again in Borough Park, the Jewish community was having, you know, a full all out, you know, hangout session with, I think it was one of the rabbis that had passed away. He might have been like 100 and something years old. I don't remember. But I guess, you know, the way that they do their funerals, like the entire block is out. The entire synagogue is there to, like, you know, I guess, usher the rabbi home. I don't know. But literally, there were hundreds of people outside in violation of the order to not crowd, to not, you know, be in these streets, they were like hundreds of people out there holding up the coffin and just being spectators, like on top of each other. And to me, I'm like, this is exactly why this disease, this virus, has not slowed down, because people refuse to stay home. People who are non-essential refuse to stay home. And this, you know, YOLO lifestyle that a lot of these people are living, it has serious consequences. You might not care about your life, but there are other people who would like to see another day. And because, you know, the more we learn about this virus, the more we are learning that, you know, you can have no symptoms whatsoever and still infect other people. That's crazy. So just because you're not coughing and you're not sniffling, you think that you're free to just roam the streets. That's not true, because you're getting somebody's grandmother sick. You're getting somebody who has asthma sick. You're sending people to their graves, people who are probably just trying to do their jobs. But here you come, because you're having one life to live moments, and you're infecting people and essentially killing people. Like, the situation in Brooklyn is crazy. You know, I was reading this morning about the Brooklyn hospitals, how they're overloaded. Some of them, you know, were running out of basic medication that they needed to kind of stabilize some of these COVID patients when it came to blood pressure, when it came to just respiratory, like everyday medication that they're running out of, because now they're having to use these medications on, you know, this large population of people who are presenting themselves with COVID. Forget the non-COVID people who still need those medications, but the situation is dire. And so, you know, the PSA that everybody has been, you know, saying is stay your asses at home. If you are not an essential worker that needs to really be in these streets, stay your ass at home. If, you know, I understand we got to make grocery runs because Instacart, at least where I am, they are not in operation. I cannot find a delivery window to save my life. Amazon Prime does not have a delivery window at all. So I'm not sure what I will be doing, but I understand that there needs to be runs, right? You got to make the grocery store run right quick. Those I understand, the pharmacy run, but the hanging out in the street business, the hanging out, you know, having house parties, like, that needs to stop. Like, we just need to stay indoors for the next couple of weeks so that we can hopefully see a flattening of the curve, right? So that we can start seeing a decrease of the amount of people catching this thing and a decrease in the amount of deaths. So I'm all here for this, you know, this Urban Dictionary word of the week, this anti-social nearing business. Stop doing it. Keep the social distance. The government said social distancing is in place. Let's just listen for once. I know some of us are rebels. We don't listen to the government. But at this point, I'm telling you guys, please stay your asses at home. Stop being in these streets. It is not worth it. You might not care about your life, but other people do. And we need you to stay your ass at home. So it is now time for one of my favorite sections of the show. It is now time for the big up of the week. Watch it. When you feel big up, big up. All of the woman, them big up, big up. All of the girl, them big up, big up. So this week's big up of the week, I actually have a couple of big ups this week, only because during times of crisis, this is where you see a good portion of humanity come out and really show themselves strong, right? Obviously, we have the other side that refuses to comply with ordinances and they're about YOLO. But outside of that, you know, group, we do have a lot of people doing amazing things in this community. So the first person I'm going to actually big up is Mario Salerno. I don't know this man from a can of paint. However, he's been all over my social media. He's been all over the news. This is a landlord who canceled rent for hundreds of tenants here in New York. So Mario Salerno, according to the New York Times, owns about 18 apartment buildings in New York. And so he did not want his renters to stress about the payments during the corona pandemic. So he canceled the month of April's rent. So for me, I feel like this is a real big deal, because you know why? There's a lot of landlords out here who are like, F you, pay me. They don't care what's going on in these streets. They don't care what's happening. They don't care that you lost your job, that you're furloughed. They don't care that unemployment hasn't kicked in. And by which, even if unemployment kicks in, it will still 1 month of unemployment will still not equal to 1 month's rent for most people living in New York City. But the fact that this guy, you know, gave some sort of like abatement in a sense. I don't know what he's going to do about May, because this thing does not seem like it's about to end anytime soon. Maybe he might do it on a case by case basis, but at least he gave some sort of break. And so I feel like more and more landlords need to take a page from this book. Not everybody is working. Not everybody has the ability to pay their rent. Although I know that evictions, you know, have been, you know, halted, I think at least 3 months. I don't know. Somebody can correct me. Either way, though, the fact that he is not even trying to take it there, right? He's just like, listen, let me help you guys out for this month. At least I think that that's definitely big up worthy. So definitely big up to you. So I want to move this over to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, where my cousin Chef Claudie is doing his thing. And so I love my cousin Claudie. He's always doing amazing things. He's always participating and helping out the community the best way he knows how to, which is through food. But he owns his company, Arnold's Tea, up in Pittsburgh, and he and his people have partnered up with different organizations within the community to actually provide food to those who are unable to, you know, get food. Right. So we're talking about the elderly community. We're talking about the low income community. We're talking about the disabled community. And so I really wanted to big up and highlight him for the work he's doing in Pittsburgh. It's so easy for us to focus on what's going on in New York City because, I mean, this is where we live. Right. But it's great to also highlight other people around the country who are also doing amazing things to help out their community. So I definitely wanted to shout out Claudie for the amazing work that he is doing through his company, providing meals to those who cannot, you know, who cannot afford it and who are really going through serious, desperate times, you know, because of this coronavirus situation. And so if you guys know of people who are doing great things in the community, please DM me, slide up in my DMs at According to RP on Instagram, or send me an email accordingtorp@gmail.com and let me know who's doing amazing things in the community. Who is, you know, really trying to make a way out of no way, right? Who's using their talents. I mean, we have a lot of people who are using their talents right now to really give back. Oh, before I leave this segment, I do want to shout out my cousin Nadine Garcon, who is a fashion designer here in New York City. She's a young fashion designer, one of my cousins. I have a lot of cousins, people. And she is making masks for healthcare workers and for, you know, all of us in our everyday lives, because we recently heard from, you know, I don't know if it was the CDC, that, you know, we should be wearing masks when we leave the homes. Obviously not the surgical masks, because we have to leave them for the healthcare workers, but even using a cloth mask, a bandana, but that when we leave our homes and we are outside, we need to have some sort of protective gear over our face and mouths. And so my cousin Nadine from J'espère, which is J-E-S-P-E-R-E fashion line, she created fashion filtered masks. So although they look cute, they're not just there for the looks, but they're functional, because she provides filters to insert into these masks. And so they are available. If you go onto her Instagram page, it's _ J'espère, J-E-S-P-E-R-E. She's selling the fashion filtered masks, but she's also creating simpler plain masks for the healthcare workers specifically, because I know that some hospitals have guidelines and whatnot. And so if you are interested in getting yourself some masks, she create them with a polypropylene non-woven material, which I did a little research is an acceptable material for, you know, for masks. So it's not like a cotton t-shirt. They actually will provide some sort of protection. So you definitely want to, you know, get yourself a mask. I ordered myself too. I'm letting all my friends know to get yourself some masks. So big up to you, Nadine, for, you know, she could have been doing anything right now, right? She could have been working on her fashion line, but she heard the call and she answered it. And I also want to give, I know I keep saying it's going to be over, but it's not. I also want to give a very, very big up to our healthcare professionals out here in these streets. The nurses. I mean, nurses and doctors are dropping like flies, but the nurses, they are going to work scared every day, but they're still doing it. The doctors are going to work scared every day, but they are saving lives. They are saving lives. And we are seeing reports of people, you know, coming out of this COVID situation, people being discharged, people recovering, people getting off the vent. So we want to say thank you to the healthcare workers, the professionals that are out here risking their lives every single day for us, which is why it's even more important for y'all to stay your asses at home if you do not need to be in the streets, because we are putting more strain on the healthcare system by exposing ourselves or by infecting other people. So big up to all of you guys today. I cannot wait for the next round of big ups for next week's episode. So remember to send those in. If you or somebody you know are doing amazing things in these street COVID related, send us a DM so that we could shout you guys out. So with every high, we know there is a low. And I mean, there are lows on an everyday, you know, on an everyday scale, there's always a low. But in times of crises, it's crazy when, you know, we see certain kinds of lows, i.e. hoarding medical supplies, right? So in Brooklyn, New York apparently is on the map for a lot of things these days. But either way, in Brooklyn, New York, I think this was like what, last week, April 2nd is when this article came out from ABC News. Hundreds of thousands of masks and other medical supplies, such as ventilators, right? N95 respirator masks, medical gloves. So let me actually give you guys the numbers here, because I feel like if I just cite them, you guys might be like, we don't know. Maybe it was two gloves. Maybe it was, you know, just a box. No. So in Brooklyn, New York, we had a man of the Jewish persuasion who was hoarding. And when I say hoarding medical supplies in the Borough Park section of Brooklyn. Again, another infamous part of Brooklyn that's, you know, really known for just not following directions and just really disrespecting the community, in my opinion. I digress. So according to the DOJ, equipment that was seized from Mr. Feldheim included roughly 192,000 N95 respirator masks, nearly 600,000 medical gloves, 130,000 surgical masks, procedure masks, N100 masks, surgical gowns, disinfectant towels, particulate filters, bottles of hand sanitizer, and disinfectant spray. I believe I also saw somewhere that they even found ventilators. Either way, 43-year-old Baruch Feldheim is the culprit. He is the one that was hoarding these supplies in order to take advantage of the COVID-19 crisis. He was selling them to doctors and nurses at prices as much as 700% above market value. Now, the real reason, though, although that wasn't enough, but the real reason that Mr. Feldheim is in the news is because when FBI agents confronted him about the sales, he allegedly coughed in their direction and told them that he had the coronavirus. So Feldheim has been charged with assault of a federal officer, because coughing, spitting, things like that to a federal officer is considered a crime, as well as lying to investigators for allegedly deceiving them when they asked him about the equipment. So apparently he hasn't entered a plea. And so according to the files or whatever the case is, he did not enter into a plea to the charges, but his attorney states that he categorically denies the allegations. I haven't heard that one before. I've heard vehemently denies the allegations. I've heard, you know, just plain denies the allegations, but categorically denies the allegations. Interesting choice of words. So now people are probably wondering what happened to all of these, you know, hundreds of thousands of supplies that were seized from Mr. Feldheim. I love exaggerating people's names, so please bear with me. But apparently the DOJ had distributed these materials to the local hospitals that were obviously in need of these materials. But according to news outlets, Feldheim will be paid at the market value for the equipment being distributed to the New Jersey and New York health departments. Now, that part to me is a little bit sketchy. And this is where, you know, we got to put on our race hat, right? Because everything's about race in this country, whether you want to believe it or not. Mr. Feldheim hoarded hundreds of thousands of medical supplies in the midst of a pandemic. Hospitals do not have enough masks to give their nurses. They're asking their nurses to recycle masks. They are recycling and cleaning off their protective gowns because they do not have enough, right? So this man took advantage, clearly took advantage by hoarding all of these supplies. Why do we know he took advantage? Because he is not a medical supplier. He is not a medical supply distributor. That is not his profession, which means he bought all these things to take advantage of a crisis. He hoarded them and was found to be selling them to doctors and nurses at a price point of 700% more than the market value. Like, this is not a allegation. People, like, this is, they have this information. That's why they were investigating him. That's why the FBI rolled up at his house and not the NYPD or Department of, I don't know, inspections or whatever the case is. This is why Attorney General Office didn't just roll up on them. The FBI did. And you're trying to tell me that Mr. Feldheim, Mr. Baruch Feldheim, is still going to be paid market value for the equipment that was seized and now being distributed to the New Jersey Department of Health and New York State Department of Health? If this were a black man, if it was not Mr. Baruch Feldheim, but it was, I don't know, Tyrone Johnson, who had committed this heinous crime, if you ask me, because I don't know. That's my opinion, that this was a heinous crime, because we are clearly in crisis right now. People are risking their lives. Nurses are dying because they don't have enough, you know, personal protective equipment, right? And here he has truckloads that he hoarded, selling at 700% over the market value. And you're telling me that this man is going to be paid fair market value for hoarding these equipments? Tyrone Johnson, not only would he, you know, be arrested, probably would have been killed in the process. Either way, not only would he been arrested, probably with no bail in sight. There is no way in hell Tyrone Johnson would be reimbursed, basically, for his, not even reimbursed. So here's the funny part. If we're, you know, I'm a wordsmith at times. They said that he would be paid the market value. We don't know at what value that Feldheim bought these materials. He could have bought it way below market value. He could have got a hookup, right? But they are saying that he's going to be paid market value. So he will probably still stand to make a profit off of the equipment that he's been hoarding for God knows how long. Tyrone Johnson would not have been reimbursed for his expenditures. Tyrone Johnson would have been thrown away. The key would have been locked. He would have had no real representation. Like, I can't even tell you the millions of things that would have happened to a Tyrone Johnson if he was the one that hoarded these materials and were selling them on the black market at 700% more than the actual value. He would have definitely not have been reimbursed. I find this to be particularly crazy. I find this to be particularly insane. I don't even know what other words to use for this. Like, my vocabulary is now shot, because I am shocked and appalled is not even the appropriate phrase for how I'm feeling right now. And it's only because Mr. Feldheim is Jewish. It's only because he's Jewish. This type of consideration would have never happened for anyone else. I mean, anyone of the non-white community, the non-Jewish community. I don't know. I'm actually a little bit outraged, to be very honest. And I think that it's crazy. that this is, you know, what's happening in the midst of this crisis. Like, this is how things are being handled and processed. And even in crisis, racism and classism and all of those isms still prevail. So Mr. Baruch Feldheim, and I don't know, the federal government or whoever's prosecuting him, or whoever made that crazy asinine decision to reimburse the man for his ill acts, they are my womp womp of the week. Either way, we are now on to the meat of the show. All right, everyone, I'm here with my very special guest, Samuel Pierre. Say hello.
Hey, Sam Pierre in the building.
Jeff Lindor, say hello.
Hello. Hello, everyone. How's it going?
And the superstar in the group, Jackson Shiri, say hello.
What's up?
So I am
audio or the video? This is a video. This is
going You know what, Sam? We're doing this over again. It's audio. We're just seeing each
other. This is fun.
All right, fine, fine. I'll let it. People are used to my banter with you, so I'll let it rock. But either way, thank you guys for being part of the According to RP special today. Give your hands a round of applause. I don't hear the round of applause. So today I have these three special guests on the show because we are paying tribute to one of our fallen soldiers, Gibbs. Some of us know him by Big Gibbs. Some of us know him by just Gibbs. I don't think anybody knew him by his actually full government name, though. But unfortunately, you know, we lost him.
That was his government name.
No, his last name, meaning his full government name, Sam.
Okay.
This is not rolling the way it needs to with you. I'm going to mute your mic. But either way, I know we're cracking up. We're having fun here, but it actually is, you know, sad times. I guess this is just how we're coping with everything. But we lost him, you know, from the COVID-19 coronavirus situation. And so we thought it was best that we can get together and to really kind of honor him and really talk about the legacy of Gibbs. You know, he's somebody that I didn't know that many people in Brooklyn knew him. When I reposted your post, Sam, like, I had people DMing me from, like, all over talking about, oh, my God, I can't believe he was gone. And I'm like, I didn't even know you knew him. So he's definitely somebody that touched a lot of lives. And so I know Sam, Jeff, Jackson, you guys were some of the closest to him. And so we wanted to kind of get everybody together just to kind of remember him, talk about some of the good times, talk about the important work that he did, particularly with HACC. As the director of Workforce Outreach?
Workforce Development. Yep.
Workforce Development. And just really kind of, you know, give him the respect that he's due. So I don't know who wants to start first. Sam, since you are the head of HACC, the executive director of HACC, I know that he, particularly within the last year or two, was really, really going hard with the workforce development trainings with OSHA. So I don't know if you want to talk a little bit about, you know, about the work that he was doing there.
Yeah, well, yeah. So funny enough, we can't tribute Gibbs without jokes and stories, you know? So like, be prepared for that. Funny enough, a lot of people don't know, Gibbs came to me about this workforce development thing back in 2009.
Oh, wow.
2010, yeah. One time we were hosting an event at St. Francis College. Jeff was the host. And Gibbs came through there yelling and screaming. What are we doing about jobs? That's when it really first came. And then
I remember that.
Yeah. We were doing an event back there. Gibbs came yelling and screaming. It was hilarious. And we actually have footage of it too, Jeff. I'll send it to you.
Oh, please do. Send it. Yeah, remember that.
That's how long ago Gibbs has been talking about this workforce development program. And just to make a long story short, Gibbs came to me in 2017 because he needed his own OSHA card. And he was like, Sam, I'm not paying for an OSHA card. You have relationships. You have contacts. Get me into a class. So I was, you know how Gibbs called me every day. Gibbs called me every single. I got your attention. He called me every day. So I finally, I was like, all right, let me get him in an OSHA class. So I found an OSHA class. I put Gibbs in. The next day, my office opens. Gibbs like, yo, I'm not going back to that OSHA class. I'm like, what happened, bro? I got into you to a free OSHA class. OSHA class is $600. I got you in there for free. What do you mean you're not going there? He said, if I go back there, it's either I'm slapping everybody in there and a teacher, or I'm going to jail. I'm like, what happened, bro? He said, yo, I don't like the way they look at me. You know, every time I speak, people be smirking in the back. He's like, you know, he's the only black guy there. You know what I'm saying? He said there's preconceived, people have preconceived, you know, notions of who he is and where he came from. And then he was like, he almost slapped this dude in the back because Gibbs was trying to say a word, but he didn't have the right word. He didn't say, and the guy jumped to finish the word for him, bro. And Gibbs is like, yo, man, I'm not going back there. So then, the words came flying out of my mouth. I wish I could catch the words before they came out, but they already came out. I was like, man, well, if you ain't happy with that class, then you need to start your own, man. And the words just flew out my mouth. It just flew out. Woof. Yo, 2 days later, he was like, yo, I got 40 people ready to go. The instructor cost $3,000. Yo, I'm like, what? Yo, what did I get myself into? Yo, but that's how Gibbs was. And then that's how it started. That's how the OSHA class started. And we have five classes ever since.
Wow.
And wow. So it went from him wanting to get an OSHA card to becoming the director of the Workforce Development Program.
Yeah. And I remember you guys were able to get a lot of good sponsorships for that program as well, too. Sponsorships.
Well, we're the only one in East Flatbush. East Flatbush has zero workforce development programs.
Mm. Wow.
And that's one of the things that Gibbs was the most proudest about, was because he brought that first program in East Flatbush. He trained 160 people, which is why I'm like, we can't have a funeral for this guy. 160 people have OSHA 30 cards because of him. Mm. Powerful. And 50% of those he got them jobs. So like 75 people have jobs because of Gibbs, and you're gonna have a funeral like that. Like, it's gonna be bananas.
Yeah. Well, that explains why all these random people are like sliding up in the DMs talking about, yo, Gibbs, and I'm like, oh man. So Jeff, your experience, your engagement, your thoughts on Gibbs.
Well, yeah, so Gibbs was someone who taught me a lot because, you know, like I would say that Gibbs was one of the best community organizers that I ever met, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and he was very fundamental and very basic talking to people. So there's this notion that, you know, you don't judge a book by its cover. Mm-hmm. And Gibbs would always say it all the time. Like, he was like, how whenever he's in a train or something like that, or when people see him, there's this automatic fear because he's like a big solid guy. You know, so now it's just so stereotypical. When you see him, you're just automatically thinking, oh my God, like, this is a big, scary guy.
Mm-hmm.
But now Gibbs actually loved that because he actually played on to that. Because he always loved to prove people wrong. So that when you now speak to him, you're like, wait, huh? That's not what I've envisioned, you know? Mm-hmm. So in that notion, you know, he always leveraged that to talk to people, you know? Because now, if Gibbs is talking to you, what, are you going to ignore him? Oh, no, hell no. You know what I'm saying? You know, like, especially if you're seeing him for the first time, you know what I'm saying? You're not going to ignore him, right? You know what I'm saying? Absolutely not, right? So now in that, he leveraged that to build relationships, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So just the, you know, work that I've seen that he's done, but also, you know, like he had such a profound impact on my life, especially as it relates to the Gentleman's Factory, because the Gentleman's Factory is a private membership club for Black men. But now in that, we tend to focus on men that are upwardly mobile, the emerging and established professionals. Mm-hmm. So now Gibbs would always challenge me to say, hey, what are we doing for those who, you know, may not be able to afford the access, right? And mm-hmm. or he would always ask me, hey, Jeff, you know, I understand what you're doing with the Gentleman's Factory, but did you, like, were you raised upwardly mobile? You know what I mean? Or how did you arrive there, right? You know? And then for which, you know, it was always a challenge because it was like, okay, you know what, where do I, one, of course I don't want Gentleman's Factory to be like this elitist space, but then, you know, it is a private institution. So one thing that I loved about Gibbs, though, was that he would always challenge me on that. And then he would always bring individuals who may have had some traumatic experiences to mm-hmm. the Gentleman's Factory and giving them an experience, right? You know, and then he and I were actually going to do some work together on Rikers Island, you know, like, and I remember talking to Sam about this, and then Sam actually said that Gibbs would have been the perfect fit for it because we, you know, because we were going to do a lot of like workforce development work mm-hmm. on Rikers Island, for which I was going to task Gibbs to help run that program, right? So, you know, me as someone who grew up in the hood, constantly reminded me that I did not grow up in Westchester County, but I grew up in Coney Island. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, I will forever be grateful for, one, seeing how Gibbs could move in any room that he was in, two, to not judge a book by its cover, and three, to always have your passion on a community, because the community would definitely, you know, help you grow professionally, you know? So, yeah, Gibbs is definitely going to be missed.
I definitely agree with you with him being able to move in the different spaces. I mean, the first time I met him had to be years ago. I can't remember, but I know the last few times I saw him were within, you know, the political spaces, right? Like Farrah's campaign trail, and just seeing him in the room with all of these different, you know, constituents, these different stakeholders, and then just seeing how, like, I remember the last time, I think it might have been Farrah and Sam's joint birthday thing that was at Woodlands, rest in peace, and he was down there, and he was in the corner. When I first saw him, I was just like, I'm like, what are you doing here? And he was like, he was dressed in like regular clothes, like not even, but it's just the way that he was like observing the room. He was seeing how like everybody was, you know, and he was just able to mingle with like everybody and still crack jokes on everybody in the corner where he was standing. But it was his ability to like, just, you know, move. Like the first time I remember meeting him, it was just like, who are you? It's like, I'm Sam's cousin. It's like, Sam didn't tell me he had a cousin named Rita. And that's how we kind of like, you know, had become cool from then. And then the Brooklyn Commons experiences, every time I was trying to get work done, the noise would always come from the hack office. But I thought I escaped the noise. It's like it was always following me. But I felt like he was always able to like I never caught him like, I never caught him mad. I never caught him like frustrated. He was always like a happy go lucky person, always ready to make a joke, always ready to give like a hug. Like he was never, I've never seen him in a space that was like he was mad, he was tight. I'm sure definitely that he's had those moments, but I never saw them. And he was always so like welcoming every time like he saw me. So I think for that, you know, that the part that I'm going to miss, because I feel like there could have been a lot more work that, you know, we could have probably all done together for the community that unfortunately is not going to get done.
Yeah.
Jackson. Superstar, yeah. Grammys, Grammy Jackson. I've been trying to get you on my show forever, and this is how I get you on my show.
We lit.
So tell us your experience, you know, your encounters with Gibbs, your relationship, you know, how he's going to be, you know, missed in the community.
You know, I mean, it's great to be on your show, Rita, for sure. You know, I mean, with Gibbs, it's so many different elements. Number one, you know, growing up with Gibbs, you know, as family, and also Gibbs was lived a block away from me, you know. And Gibbs was a person that was always good at bringing people together from different walks of life. Mm-hmm. And he always was good at making you see the good in everything and everyone. Because, you know, Gibbs always looked at it as, this person has to have something good to offer. You know?
Yeah, word.
You know, I mean, that's how he looked at it. He's like, yo, no matter what you see, it's like, there's no way this person had, you know, nothing to offer. And I think it stemmed from him being so, him being so big, you know, which caused him to always move his mind to that direction. I have a story. When one year I went to Miami, and this is the side of Gibbs where once Gibbs is around, you believe that you can get something out of him, mm-hmm. whether it's protection, whether it's extra help, whether it's a quick administrator that doesn't need to do much but give direction, mm-hmm. you know, whether it's for someone that you need to innovate real quick, even if the idea might fail, but you know, Gibbs, it'll do something just the whole space. You know what I mean? I got to Miami, and this is when I didn't know, I didn't know much about Haitian Flag Day and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, people like me, Sam, Jeff, we didn't grow up as squares where we didn't know nothing, but we didn't grow up in the lolly either.
Yeah.
Right. So we knew about a summer jam. We knew enough that the general pop was talking about, but we didn't know what the culture was talking about other than the things our parents told us to stay away from. By the time we got to Miami, and I was with my wife, and my wife was like, yo, you know what? And mind you, again, I didn't know that was Haitian Flag Weekend. I just was like, yo, you know, it's my second year of marriage. You know, man, I'm still, you know, a young boy trying to chill. I told my wife, come meet me after I get there. And I was there for 3 days, and my wife came to meet me. And again, I didn't know the week before Memorial Weekend was so crazy lit too. Mm-hmm. And it so happened to be Haitian Flag Weekend. So now I get to the hotel. I'm staying on the Ocean Drive. I'm staying on the drive. And I go outside, and outside is like a whole mess. and I was just like, once we got inside, I was like, I'm good, yo. I'm not going outside because I don't want no type of smoke. I'm good. So when I got upstairs after a while, you know, hanging out, we do what we do as a married couple. And my wife's like, I'm hungry. I'm like, you hungry? Girl, it's like 11 o'clock. And this is not an a la carte, you know, like we're not on a ship where they just deliver food at 1 o'clock. But 11, I'm like, yo, you're going to have to sleep hungry. She's like, no, I'm hungry. And then I was like, you know what, let me figure this out. So when I looked outside, because we were able to look at outside. I was like, everybody's drunk. I don't want no parts of this. But she's like, but I'm really hungry. And I was like, you know what? If I die or something happens, it's because you were hungry. Right? So I got outside. I was like, I'm going to put my Brooklyn face on. You know what I mean? And I'm going to just mean mug until I get to this pizza shop. And mean mug on my way back. So I get there. And while I'm walking through, all I really see is I see four dudes that's over 6'2" with big beards and like arms that's over 6 inches. And I was just like, yo, what is that? Then one of them said, yo, Jackson. And then I looked, it was Gibbs. It was Gibbs with his whole crew, which is Big Reg, Max, and another dude I didn't know with huge beards. And at the time, he always used to wear the Muslim scarf at the time. Mm-hmm. And I'm not gonna lie to you, once I seen him at that point, I was like, I was like, yo, bro. Now I had an assurance that I could bump into anybody that I wanted. I felt like I could do whatever I want because I felt like whoever's there, he's going to beat him up. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And little do we know is that Gibbs practically fought his last few battles by high school. As mm-hmm. big as he was, by the time he got older, he had no more fights like that. Because Gibbs was always faster to want to look for a solution. Because mm-hmm. he's like, yo, yeah. If we can settle this, let's settle this. Why get our hands mm-hmm. dirty? You know, right. So, you know, when it comes to Gibbs once more, like I said, he wanted to bring the community together in a way that he believed all of us had something to offer in particular. Mm-hmm. And it's so crazy. He kept saying, yo, Jackson, don't forget I'm your bodyguard. Don't forget. And let's be, what's deep is that me, Sam, Reg, me, Sam, Gibbs, and Jeff didn't necessarily meet in the same place. Mm-hmm. That's what you. I want everybody to understand is that we all had our own relationship with him, and he came into their world, in that world in particular. So meaning how I grew up with Gibbs and how, what I know of Gibbs has nothing to do with the relationship Sam has with Gibbs. How he knows his, you know, man, and what I, you know, just to, you know, close my part is that one of my favorite things about Gibbs as to date as of late is when I would go to Gemini's factory and watch this guy school dudes with, you know, many degrees. And I'm not talking about degrees from No Shade to BMCC, which I got a degree from them too. I have a Berkeley degree, but I'm talking about he's putting people from Yale, Harvard, NYU, Columbia on their butt. He's like,
absolutely.
He's like, yo, what are you talking about? Trees? Let me tell you about trees. When Jesus called Adam, one thing Gibbs is good at is he's gonna be like, right, Jackson? Am I supposed to say right? I'm like,
yeah.
Right, yeah, cool. You know, so like I said, my relationship with Gibbs was evolution of it that it was just forever growing to what it was for that season, you know?
So the one thing that I know, like, you know, in talking about Gibbs, you know, and really talking about legacy, really, is more so, you know, the importance of legacy in our community, right? Because we see this individual who, you know, was bringing people together, that was leading, you know, initiatives in the community, such as, you know, workforce development, which is something that's desperately needed in our communities. And like, he's, you know, unfortunately, he's gone now, but we will never forget him for the work that he has done in the community. And a lot of times when we think about legacy, we're thinking about, you know, somebody who had money, somebody who had a lot of wealth, who had a lot of power. But here we're talking about, you know, Gibbs, who's like one of us, who, you know, his claim to fame in a sense was just being somebody who was about the community and really, you know, bringing people together. So I wanted to kind of have a conversation about, you know, the importance of, you know, legacy in our community and how do we continue to, I guess, expand in a sense, or how do we keep the legacies of individuals like Gibbs? How do we keep their legacies, you know, moving forward so that, you know, the next generation will know about these individuals?
Good. Sam?
Well, I feel like, so the first things first with Gibbs is like, and Jackson and Jeff both alluded to this, is that Gibbs has multiple audiences, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you know, you can, Michael Jordan has a legacy for basketball, right?
Mm-hmm.
But Michael Jordan could also have a legacy for motivation, right? Mm-hmm. You know how many people are motivated just by seeing Michael Jordan with the Jumpman logo?
Mm-hmm.
How, just from looking at it, people were motivated by Michael Jordan, right? So like, and then Michael Jordan probably has a legacy of being a gambler, right?
right.
And being overly vulnerable.
Right.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So like, some people just have one legacy. Oh, he did this and that was it. And that's what you know him for, right? But like Kobe, right? Kobe won a freaking Oscar. Kobe wrote a children's book, right? Kobe was a coach for his daughter's team.
Yeah.
So like when you ask the girls from his daughter's team, how do you know what's Kobe Bryant's legacy? They're going to be like, he was my coach. They don't know the Kobe Bryant that we know that was on TV. They don't know him. They know Kobe Bryant. Oh, that was my coach. I lost my coach. I didn't lose one of the best Lakers of all time. They're not going to say that. They're going to say, well, I lost my coach. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, so I'm saying that to say that it's crazy that Gibbs is going to have so many different legacies. You're going to ask gang members, yo, what's your legacy? We lost the protector of the community,
mm-hmm.
right? You ask somebody else, they're going to say, yo, we lost the guy who helped me get a job. You ask somebody else, they're going to be like, yo, we lost the guy that used to give me advice.
Yeah.
So in terms of the legacy, right, like I think everyone's going to have the different, you know, the different visions and legacies of Gibbs. And one of the things that I've been talking to people about is that Gibbs could have multiple legacies, right?
Yeah.
He can have a street named after him. He can have a program named after him. He can have a bandana named after him. He can have a t-shirt named that. Like, the legacy doesn't have to just be a statue and then that's it. Okay, we have a statue of Gibbs and that's it. Like, the legacy could be simple. Or a mural. It could be something simple like, yo, Gibbs used to like to wear those hats. We're going to make hats now. And we're gonna start a company like the hat that Jack has on.
Mm-hmm.
We're gonna, you know, he might just do a line from the hat and call it the Gibbs Seraphin line.
Mm-hmm.
That could be the legacy. You know what I'm saying? Like, multiple different things. Like, that could just be the Gibbs Seraphin legacy.
Mm-hmm.
And that can live on in its own way. So people could wear his hat. People who liked how he dressed could wear his hat and be like, yo, this is how I'm celebrating his legacy. People who are in the OSHA program could be like, all right, I'm going to celebrate his legacy by continuing to push his program.
Yeah.
So for me, I think that we have to look at it in a new way where legacy the legacy can live on in so many multiple ways. Somebody could do a documentary on Gibbs. Somebody could mm-hmm. do a video. Somebody could do a book. We even talked about like Jackson doing some stuff musically, right? Like all of that could be a part of a legacy. Legacy no longer means one thing, and legacy no longer means $100 million,
mm-hmm.
right? Because because a street name might hold more weight than $100 million endowment.
Mm-hmm.
That's right, but you know, like I think it's beyond Gibbs' legacy because he has the template, right? You know, so there are so many, you know, men who get stuck. And they don't know how to navigate certain rooms, or they don't know how to bridge the gap, no pun intended, Mr. Sherry. You know what I'm saying? So in that, it's like, how do you take your upbringing? And the thing about Gibbs was that he was exposed. So people operate in life based off of the level of information they've obtained, right? Mm-hmm. So because Gibbs was now exposed to a whole new realm of existence, Gibbs was literally teaching a masterclass of how do you navigate these rooms while not losing your identity,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
So Gibbs was extremely comfortable in his skin, right? He was extremely comfortable in his skin. He was one of the most confident people that I've ever interacted with, right? So then as a result, he now then said, all right, this is who I am. I'm smart. I'm brilliant. I have all, I'm supposed to be here. So then as a result, how do I now, you know, navigate these spaces while also taking a community that doesn't know these realms of existence exist? And how do I now bring their issues in the limelight, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And the thing too is that Gibbs would not only do that in white spaces, but he would do that to people like me, who I wouldn't say that I'm removed from, like, you know, that segment of the population, because I grew up in that segment of the population that he cares so deeply about. But at the same time, you know, if it's not, so like Gibbs made it his duty to say, hey, what about the hood? What about mm-hmm. this or what about that, right? Black men are known for the streets, right? But when we hear black men in the streets, it's normally about something negative. Now, mm-hmm. Gibbs was in these streets before positive. And mm-hmm. I think that it's important that we name one of the streets after him so that now that's a way to carry his legacy. Mm-hmm. But then he also carried the template of how to be a community advocate.
No, I definitely agree with you there. I think it is important, like when we're talking about legacy in the community, to have some sort of like physical structure manifestation. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why we do see the murals that go up, right? We see the erections of mm-hmm. some sort of like, you know, statue or whatever the case is. We see street names. But I think outside of, you know, the physical, you know, structures and the physical manifestations, it is important for us that knew him, that worked with him, that, you know, worked on projects with him, to find a way to continue his legacy through continuing his work, the work that he was so passionate about, right? So the workforce development program that was happening with Hack, like, that can't stop just because Gibbs isn't here anymore. That has to continue, and it has to continue, one, because it was a good program that was benefiting the community, but it was something that he was passionate about as well too. And so it's almost as if, like, you know, you can't let his, you know, death be in vain, right? He started a work, and it's up to us now to continue with the work that he was doing and expand on it.
Yep, yep.
I mean, I think that having that perspective of legacy, I think, is important for our community, because I think too often we think about legacy in terms of, like, dollar signs, right? Or some sort of, like, you know, fame and fortune. We don't really think about our local heroes who were, like, in the streets with us, just trying, you know, that were doing, you know, real work in the community, and that was not getting, you know, acknowledgments and accolades for the work that they were doing, but they were actually impacting people. So I think, you know, highlighting the fact that, like, that's a legacy right there is important.
For sure.
Yes. Sam Pierre.
No, it's Jackson's turn. It's Jackson's turn.
Is Jackson is back? All right.
No, I've been here. Yeah. I mean, like, for me, when it comes to, legacy, I think the idea of beyond my existence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once I think legacy, that's what I think. Beyond my existence, beyond my vocabulary, beyond actually my capacity. Because once you think legacy, that means other people have to be a part of it to build.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because one of the things legacy does it empowers.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Another thing legacy does, it causes people to never forget. Okay? You know, one thing legacy does is cause something to move on and live on beyond them. And I definitely believe Gibbs was, you know, he lived a legacy that caused people to think of the bigger picture always. That, again, you know, with the idea of continuously think, you know, oh my God, like, how can I see more in Jackson?
Mm-hmm.
How, yeah. You know, every see Samantha a liar, but I want to see Samantha as a person that can tell the truth. You know what I mean? And that's how Gibbs looked at things, right? So even when it was time for him, you know, to work on the OSHA, you know what I mean? Let's be real. OSHA is a special program. Mm-hmm. Okay, OSHA is normally targeting people that's coming home from jail. Let's be real; it's coming. Mm-hmm. It's targeting a whole bunch of people that society, including their families, denying.
Yeah.
So and let's be real. Gibbs is a person that actually never spent time in jail.
Yeah.
So it'd be unfair to say that the only reason why he could do it is because he speaks their language. I don't know that. Because people that actually spend time in jail speaks a different language.
It's a different language. That's not even street language anymore.
Yeah, that's like a survival barbaric language they speak, to be honest. Because mm-hmm. It's like, it's a place of, and most of the time, let's be real, the average person that goes to jail goes back to jail.
Yeah.
Because that's what they see. But Gibbs have learned, yo, let me try to intercept them before they go into society and go back to what they know.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And let me capture them. And so for me, the, you know, legacy is bigger than us, period. Because yeah. Now Gibbs is technically gone physically, but he's definitely living on. How? It's now 10:47 Friday, April 3rd. Here comes us having a full-blown meeting about mm-hmm. a guy that's physically.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So clearly he's actually living on right now, and here comes our ability. Like, I was speaking to his son yesterday, which was crazy because his son carries a lot of his characteristics, you know, in being a giant but soft spoken.
Right.
Crazy. His son yesterday was like, you good? I was like, yo, I'm talking to his son that could bring him comfort. He's like, don't worry about me. I'm good. He's like, don't
100%. Same thing with me. I was mad. I was like, yo, stop asking how my family's doing.
And it showed me something, and it's because, you know, I mean, from and let me tell you what I've learned for the most part is that, you know, people are not, you know, people are not, how can I say, Jeff's son is not, you know, and I'm Jeff specifically, Jeff Lindo's son is not gonna get into Yale or Harvard by accident. Mm-hmm. Okay. You know what I'm saying? You know what I mean? He's being trained from now to do that. My daughter don't speak, don't read on a junior high school level of reading by accident. Mm-hmm. I mean, don't get me wrong. There's some people that just have that kind of DNA in them.
Yep.
But the reality, but there was a homework that was done.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So Gibson from the gate, could you imagine a kid like Havon? You know, Havon from young was playing football, meaning technically from young he was already on the line. I remember from the age of six. So from the young, what he understood is to attack a quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to understand that when he was young, he did an interview when he was on a quarterback, and they asked him, "When you see the quarterback, what do you see?" He says, "I see drop him."
Mm.
That was and I was nervous to hear that from him at that age. He's like, "I just want to annihilate him." Him saying that, and now to hear him now saying, "Are you okay?" It just showed me from even a young age, he learned how to play the role in that position.
Yeah.
Once he was out of football, it's not attacking. Now it's how can I be a part of doing this? So, you know, like I said, legacy is living on past your expiration date.
And I think it's interesting because I was telling Sam right before, you know, actually getting on this was that, you know, when I posted the photo of Gibbs, when I reposted Sam's, you know, rest in power post on Gibbs, there was this guy who slipped up in my DM, and he was just like, I can't believe that Gibbs is gone. And I'm just like, you know, I don't even know who this person is. And he introduced himself, and he was like, you know, he owns Tamara Tea House, like on Bergen Street or whatever, and how Gibbs was actually a project manager there. And he was saying how, you know, he always enjoyed speaking to him, and that he had actually seen Gibbs a couple of weeks ago when they were catching up. And he was just basically pouring out to me saying how he's going to miss him because this guy, you know, he's like, I'm an Asian person who has a store in a black community. And Gibbs was basically there, like, encouraging me and, you know, just kind of guiding me, you know, being an Asian store owner in a black community, like how basically the lay of the land works. And he was just like, you know, he's never going to forget him for like the kindness he showed him and the guidance that he showed him. So it's, you know, it's just interesting how it's not even just like the black community, but you have people from the Asian community. Like it's like anybody he touched, you know, anybody he came in contact with, he touched them to the point where they're slipping into random people's DMs and giving me a whole account on like how they met Gibbs, what Gibbs meant to him, the whole story.
Yep. Uh-huh.
And this guy doesn't know me from nowhere. So it just goes to show, like, you know, the power of his presence and his kindness to those who didn't even look like him. So, you know, so I feel like when we're talking about legacy, like, you know, that's just another example of how, you know, how his legacy will live on because he's touched so many people's lives, whether he knew it or not. So, I mean, I guess, you know, in terms of, I guess, next steps, like what are the next steps? What are we thinking about when we're thinking about, you know, his legacy and how do we continue to keep his name alive?
Well, I think it's something that Sam is working on with him. I think, first of all, it's a community effort, okay? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because it's easy for me to point it out and say, hey, it's something that Sam's going to do or something Jeff's going to do or Jack's going to do. I think it's something that we all going to do and we're all going to make sure we're not overlapping
in
what we're doing. We're just going to speak on it on different levels. For example, another quick story about Gibbs is the fact that my first time going to Gibbs' house, I was probably 6 years old. And I never saw trophies in real life until I went to his mom's house. You know what I mean? And I seen trophies that were bigger than me, taller than me.
Mm-hmm.
And then when Gibbs turned around and decided to go to Syracuse, we thought Gibbs was going to the NFL, to be honest with you. When we saw Gibbs back, like, yo, bro, what are you doing here? Like, you know what I mean? Because we looked at it as like a general ticket out the hood.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because it of what he did, and it just to show us, you know, the reality is, you know, he put his son in football. Football is a big passion of his. Who knows what kind of league we could sponsor and force them to change their name to the Seraphine Plus League. Mm-hmm. Who knows? You know what I mean? True. So the ideas are kind of endless, to be honest.
Yeah. And it's also something that doesn't have to happen like right this second, right? It's something that we could plan so that it's actually something that's powerful. Because I think a lot of times, you know, people will just rush to put that mural up and then like we'll leave it at that, right? And then that's the end of the legacy. So I guess, you know, right. We also want to be careful that whatever we do actually does have a real impact in the community. And it's not just, you know, a street name is great, but after a while, it's still Nostrand Avenue, right? Except for that one piece that's like somebody else's name. So we want to make sure that whatever we do is, you know, is actually long-lasting. Community. Yeah, long-lasting.
Yeah, and I want to add, like that's what I was saying earlier. I want to do something very different, right? I'm glad Jackson mentioned that we're all going to be like not overlapping. I mean, Gibbs was able to get us all, like we had a Zoom call with like 15 of us. People that haven't seen each other in God knows how long, spoken to each other how long, and in the same community, right? Mm-hmm. And Gibbs got us all together thinking about what can we do to honor him. And it was just a blessing to see everybody fighting to come up with ideas on what to do to honor him, you know? And that just shows you like what kind of person he is. So it's like, because it's like, there's multiple people coming together. So it's not just the three of us. It's, you know, you got 20, 30, 40 people coming together to say, this is how we should honor him. This is the ideas. Like we literally had a brainstorm session to figure out how to honor him. That means that there's going to be so many different things that's going to be out there to honor him. And like I was saying earlier, even if it's as simple as writing his name on a pen or, you know, like Jackson writing his name on a drumstick or something like that, that's and telling the stories, right? That's how, because that's how people remember people. That's how I know who Jesus Christ is from the stories. I never seen him, right? But from the stories that people told me that was written in about, that's how I know who he is hundreds of years later. That's how I know who Solomon and David and all these people, I never met them. But from the stories that carried on, that's how we know who we are. So I think that's going to be the difference here.
Well, I think that this was definitely a really great conversation in terms of, again, just taking the time to honor somebody who was one of us, who was really making strides in the community, who unfortunately, you know, fell victim to this coronavirus, COVID-19. I think what the shocking part is for most people was that like they just didn't expect it, right? They didn't expect anything like this to happen. It happened out of nowhere. I mean, I had people that were hitting me up saying like, you know what, I was just talking to him like last week, like who would have thought? And I think it definitely puts in perspective that whole idea of, you know, we need to get better at giving people flowers while they're alive, because you never really know when your last day is going to be or when that person's last day is going to be. So that this whole idea of community, I think it really reinforces the fact that, you know, we need to really, you know, continue to build on the community that we have and to continue to find ways to really stay connected.
Well, I mean, I definitely think it's a thing where at this point, just like I tell people, you know, people say pay your last respects. My concept these days, my last respects is my last conversation, you know, so for everyone's here, this is my last respect, because you just, if you know, it's not fair for me to say, let me go pay my last respect when you're gone, you know what I mean? So when I leave the conversation with you, the goal is to leave in a place where I have no regrets.
Yeah.
You know, where it's a, you know what I mean? I left at such a great place, you know what I mean? You know, and that's what I want to do, you know. You know, and I just want to continue to be at a place where Gibbs, you know, where Gibbs was so honest. I remember Gibbs telling him his last girlfriend, like, understand, you will never be the only one. It's
mercy.
Like, what?
Mercy.
you know, it's deep though. You know, the reality is, how many guys wish they could tell their lady that? Yeah. Hey, by the way, you're not gonna be the only one, okay? And it's not deep. This is what's deeper. He said, you know why you're not the only one? You drew someone else towards us. He's like, yo, if you did your part, you never add another person. And it sounds as crazy, and like, you know, we can get into biblical or social why it's wrong. But the part I want to shine on is the idea of him speaking his mind for what it is. So mm-hmm. who he was with couldn't say, yo, what are you talking about? Yo, when if she reads his phone, she can't go, yo, what the heck? I'm like, yo, I told you he was the only one. You know what I'm saying? And what I got out of that is, how can we have pure relationships for what it is? You know, at that person, at that time, he gives that person the ability to walk away and say, mm-hmm. I don't want nothing to do with you. But you can't say Gibbs robs you of an opportunity.
Yeah.
And that's what I loved about him the most. And, you know, I mean, like Alan, his brother, says, you know, I mean, he was a guy that was able to paint a story, whether it was true or false, or he made sure the story was so good, you would look stupid trying to change parts of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And honestly, I want to learn that skill, because skills like that bring you so much money. And Rita, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
No, of course, of course. I mean, when I spoke to Sam, I was just like, Sam, you know, let's do a tribute episode. He was like, we got to have Jackson. We got to have Jeff. And so I was like, if you can finally get Jackson, I'm going to never let you live that one down, Jackson.
What did I say to you, Rita? I love hearing stuff like that. When I'm bumping into places and people are like, Jackson Cherry? Wait, Jackson Cherry? You know Jackson Cherry? There's nothing I love better than that.
Oh, man.
Yeah, and I say that is hilarious, though, because, you know, because I agree. That's something Sam or Jeff could never say, you know, things like, yo, I was going 3-4 days looking for him. And, you know what I mean? Where people be like, yo, bro, like, even it happens to me all the time. There's like, Jeff doesn't pick up his phone. I'm like,
Well, see, here's the thing, though. Here's the thing I will say about Jackson. Here's the thing I will say. If I text Jackson, Jackson will always reply. It's getting him on the show that's been an issue. But every time I text Jackson, Jackson has never, like, left me hanging. I can't say that.
My girl. Everything's relate. Everything. You know what it is, too? And it's something else that Gibbs did, to make people realize. Everything is relationship and connected, right? You touch Jackson, you might not make home, you know. And let me tell you the deepest story about Gibbs. When Gibbs' mom got shot, his mom got shot on East 21st and Dorchester,
mm-hmm.
on his block. Gibbs found out who shot him. Gibbs, when he found out who shot his mom, he decided to look at the person like, yo, my mom made it, though.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was deep. My mom made it. So me breaking your arm right now, for what? My mom made it. She it's shot home. Now she's living happily ever after. I hope you learned with your life and move on with your life. Live happily ever. Because it's not like my mom was the target. My mom mm-hmm. wasn't the target. Now, if my mom didn't make it, God forbid, that's whole conversation. But now, my mom made it. And we have to start looking out at ourselves now, and even I'm assessing things now, that if we found times where we made it past certain things, let it go.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's true.
Appreciate you, Lirina.
Of course. I know the hour is late. I don't want to keep you guys on here for too long, but thank you guys again for joining in on the call and really just sharing, you know, your insights on everything that's been going on, and just really sharing with the world, like, who Gibbs was to you, like, who, you know, who the real big Gibbs was. He wasn't the big scary bouncer,
but he was actually
a teddy bear at heart.
That's right. Thank you so much, guys. God bless you.
You're welcome. All right. Thank you, everyone.
All right, everybody.
Bye.
All right, cool. Please, guys. All right.
You were listening to According to RP on WJMS Radio.
About time you tuned in.
Tune in each and every Sunday.
I can't wait to come back.
7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
It's all online.
WJMSradio.com.
Download the new app.
Live 365.
Listen to the show anywhere.
Anywhere, anytime.
Download it now.
Thank you.